Welcome to the first ever live Mumbrella cast. I'm Tim Burrows, and today's sponsor is Citrix GoToWebinar.
And I'm Robin Hicks. This week,
will Smooth FM succeed for DMG?
The Global Mail loses Monica Attard.
Fairfax falls in the ABCs.
The secret of Avengers' huge box office success.
Laugh at Chaos.
MEC goes real time.
Welcome along to Mumbrella House and our first live Mumbrella cast. Something of an experiment, so do bear with us. It could go any way at all. And during the course of this broadcast, feel free to type in any question about the topics at hand in the magic GoToWebinar box you'll see in front of you. Or tweet us with the hashtag MumbrellaCast, and we are monitoring what's being said there too. Joining us today is friend of the podcast, PhD Strategy Director Chris Stevenson. Hey, Chris.
Hey there, Tim. Good to be here. This is very exciting.
Mumbrella Multimedia Marketing Journalist Kathy McGinn. Mumbrella Multimedia Marketing Journalist Kathy McGinn. Kathy missed her big moment.
Hello.
Oh,
you're finally she's on.
I think there might be some lag going on, so I do apologise for that.
Get off the widow, McGinn.
Kathy is going to sound as if she's from Queensland, because it looks like there's going to be a two-second delay between when we ask. And also with us is podcast producer Colin Delaney, who you heard just there. Hey, Colin.
Hello, Tim. Hello, all.
No, welcome back to the podcast, Chris. Let's start by talking PhD. What's new in PhD?
Oh, last time I did a PhD, Tim, loads going on. The main thing for us at the moment is actually something we're doing with you guys. So our main focus has been about changing, well, one thing specifically, which is what we're doing for this year's Mumbrella 360, which we're all very excited about. So you may have read about it on Mumbrella, but PhD this year is once again asking the industry to debate change. Last year, we wrote a manifesto, so we all agreed on what we all agree, I suppose. And this year it's about making the manifesto. Let's pick one of those things, let's decide what it's going to be, and let's change it. And so we're quite excited about that.
Now for you, if it was you, what would be the one thing that you would change?
It's a very good question, and there's a few things I would like to see changed. For me, the single most important thing, I think, is about changing some kind of universal metric away from reach and scale, which I think is increasingly less relevant, and more towards some kind of metric which captures some kind of engagement or some kind of influence rather than just a purely reach metric. I think it's increasingly a less relevant way to judge what we do and how we do it.
And are you, when you say that, are you talking about any particular medium in particular? For instance, there's been lots of debate on TV, for instance, measuring TV. Actually, does it address what advertisers need when that's the metric? Is that the kind of thing you mean specifically?
Yeah, absolutely. As fragmentation takes hold, and I think some of the conversations today will be about just the extent to which fragmentation is now taking hold, I think some kind of universal metric which looks at engagement or influence will be increasingly more relevant.
So, Chris, in the news this week was Omnicom Media Group, your sort of holding umbrella media brand. Good news that you guys picked up Sony, creating Sony at OMG, a conflict shop which is designed to avoid conflict between OMD's client Apple and your own client HP. Very, very tricky situation, managing conflict. How can you outline how OMG is going to manage that?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, we take conflict very seriously, and we're all really thrilled at Omnicom that Sony strengthen the partnership that they have. Omnicom Media Group and Sony at Omnicom Media Group will work very much like an agency. It'll have its own resource. It'll be served, and we're excited about having that client in the group, and we're excited about creating a unique solution for that brand within the portfolio.
Mm-hmm. And Aegis faced a similar situation early on this year. Aegis got three car accounts: Nissan, BMW, and Holden. Sort of controversial question, but surely it's a matter of time before one of those clients goes. I mean, how do you keep those clients happy, given that they're within the same holding group?
Yeah, I mean, it's an old question, isn't it? To what extent is it really important that you manage that that you manage that confidentiality. But ultimately, if the client relationship is strong, if a client is working with an agency that they trust and that an agency is providing a great service, I think as long as the agency can communicate to that client that confidentiality is in place and that things are safe and secure and that relationship is protected, then I see no reason why those relationships can't continue.
Yeah. Were there any alarm bells at HP, your client? Were they at all unhappy when this happened, when they heard about Sony joining the fold?
We were always transparent, always very honest with our clients, and the solution that's on the table is one that's going to be the best for everyone involved. Our primary concern is making sure that all our clients get the best possible resource and get the best possible solutions on the table.
Now, Chris sort of dodged the question on changing one thing, but got there in the end, I think. Kathy, let me throw this one to you. You're formerly of a media agency. If you change one thing about media, what would it be that you change?
I suppose I think the issue of transparency, a better understanding of the processes, the costs, and the remuneration models that exist in media agencies are often quite obscure to anyone who isn't in that agency space. So I guess that, and that probably counts across the industry.
Okay, thank you for that. Now, just a reminder, if you have your own views listening about what you would change, then either tweet using the hashtag MumbrellaCast or drop in a question in the box. Chris?
Yeah, and of course, change one thing is an industry debate. So as well as hashtagging right now, you can go right now to a YouTube channel which is live. So if you go to youtube.com/changeonething, anyone and everyone is invited to upload a video saying what you would change about media. And what we'd love to see is over the course of the next 4 weeks, a real debate on that channel about if you could change one thing, what would it be? So if you want to go to youtube.com/changeonething, get involved.
Next, DMG gets smooth.
Last week, DMG announced that Sydney station 95.3 and Melbourne station 91.5 would become Smooth FM. As the name suggests, it would see the stations play easy listening as opposed to classic rock, as it once did on 95.3 Classic Rock and Vega. So Tim, you spoke with Group Programming Director Paul Jackson and Group Marketing Director Tony Thomas. Will it be fourth time's a charm?
Yeah, that's a good question. So it's not been the most stable history recently for those particular frequencies. So Vega just never quite made it. Tended to be sort of around about 4% share or something along those lines. It kind of made sense, I guess, to try something new, a classic rock. One of the issues being, though, it was very much up against Triple M over at Rival Austereo. So that maybe didn't get as much traction as they would have hoped. It was interesting, as you say, talking to Tony Thomas, because he made the point that probably just not enough marketing muscle was put behind it, you know, because and you'll have to excuse the noise. We share a building with the staff of a publication called TNT Magazine, who are currently trooping up and down the stairs out for lunch. So that's the noise you hear in the background. Which is all the fun of the live stuff. I guess the question is, the really big question is just is there a gap in the market for easy listening? Personally, I think they make a really good case. I do think they make a good case. I almost tempted them into making a prediction, I think, on what sort of share they would do, because, 4% is not enough, 10% would be brilliant. And just one moment, I thought that Paul Jackson was going to say, yes, we are going to do 10%. But he sort of held back, sensibly enough. But yeah, I think it's one that's worth watching.
Yeah, so the repositioning, the new name, and the shift in content, you think we'll see an uplift in ratings?
Yeah, I mean, what they've already done is gone into what Paul Jackson described as neutral mode. So they sort of gradually took the classic rock songs off, moved to just Sydney's 95.3, Melbourne's 91.5, so almost, you know, not having a brand at all, and switched the kind of playlist policy towards where it's going to be. You know, and that I guess was the thing that got them ready. And actually, we you know, in the latest set of radio ratings, which we wrote about this, you know, in the last few days, we did see an uptick in share, which suggests that people are
maybe beginning to like what they see.
Chris, what do you make of it as an advertising proposition?
Yeah, we were talking to their stablemates Nova this week about that, and they're massively excited within the organisation about this launch. I think that, for me, it's less about gaps in markets. It's a lot more about, can you create a credible radio brand proposition, and can you build a brand and build an audience? And I think if you can do that, there's an argument to say that you don't necessarily even can neatly map out those gaps in the market. Can you do good radio? Can you put a good format together? Can you get the right talent on air? And I think even in crowded, cluttered markets, if you can do that, I think you'll find an audience and you'll see success.
Robin, Tony Thomas called Ted Horton an advertising genius. Is Big Red a good fit, do you think, for Smooth FM's?
I do. I think it's a perfect fit. I mean, Ted knows how to make advertising for the masses, and presumably this is how the radio platform is positioning itself. You know, it's easy listening content. And Horton is obviously famous for his, you know, easy watching ads, fairly cheesy, some would say. He's done work for the likes of Jetstar, Target and Westpac. I'm thinking what he's going to do with the line Sydney's New Place to Relax. Sort of expect perhaps an ad featuring Relax by Frankie Goes to Hollywood, or in some butchered form. But, I guess we'll wait and see.
And just remember that if you do have a view yourself, please do either tweet us with the hashtag MumbrellaPodcast or pop your question into the Citrix GoToWebinar box. Robin?
Next, the Global Mail loses its founding editor.
So this week, philanthropically funded news website The Global Mail parted ways with founding editor Monica Attard just 3 months after the launch. Now, Kathy, you've previously interviewed Monica. She's also been a guest on the Mumbrella Cast in the past. Perhaps maybe start by explaining the Global Mail model. What got them to this point?
Well, it's basically been funded by businessman and philanthropist Graham Wood, who has donated $15 million to over the course of 5 years for the website to be set up. What's kind of interesting about it is that there is no revenue model, so no way currently of the Global Mail ever becoming self-reliant. Monica described it as, you know, an absolute dream for a journalist and something that she'd been kind of looking for her whole life. But the interesting thing is that even though there's a staff of 20 journalists, they're churning out content at the rate of perhaps 2 news stories a week, which, you know, is obviously difficult to kind of justify when you're so well resourced.
And Tim, what do you think will happen now with Attard? She was the driving journalistic force behind the site, and now she's gone.
Well, one of the driving forces, and I wonder whether that was one of the forms of tension. You know, there were co-founders, so that's some of it. She was very much the face of it, though. Number of issues. I guess the first question is Jane Nicholas, will that turn out to be the permanent appointment, or is that a standing-in role? I presume that Graham Wood is committed for the long term. You know, I don't think he's just going to pull his money out just because someone's left. So I suspect this will be a bit of a stutter, but I'm sure we'll see them push on and maybe find their footing in some way.
What do you think they need then? What sort of journalist are they looking for to go forward and take control?
Yeah, I mean, online editing is probably quite different to being a traditional journalist. You know, Kathy's already alluded to this whole idea that, you know, it's all about this sort of dream idea of, you know, you never have to hit a deadline because you ignore the news cycle. But the problem with that, of course, is you also lack the, you know, discipline to create content that's going to generate conversation. And I suppose the single most important job of an online editor is to create conversations so that you bring traffic into a site and you find yourself an audience. So that's maybe what they're looking for, is someone who can bring them an audience.
And Tim, you wrote an opinion piece on the 9 problems stopping the Global Mail from getting an audience. Most were fairly straightforward, things like SEO, better PR, marketing. How much work do you think they've got to do?
Well, this is probably the encouraging thing, is for me, it looks like it shouldn't be too hard to begin to get themselves moving, because, you know, there are some fairly basic things that they, you know, that they could adopt that they're actually not
yet doing. And I guess I'm thinking of just things like making more of the email list so that people subscribe, they get an automatic email when new content is up there. Just little basic things like that help drive audience. Now, you know, I've subscribed and I don't yet remember getting an email from them. And also it's just quite hard to find that subscription. So that's one thing. Navigation is something people talk about a lot. I mean, I kind of alluded to it in our piece. The fact that the whole site scrolls sideways is kind of, you know, it's kind of, you know, feels a little bit gimmicky. And certainly looking in the comment thread, a lot of people have similar objections to that. You know, maybe swallow the pride a bit and go for a more traditional navigation. Now, Kathy, you looked at the SEO side of it. What did you think of sort of what was going on behind the bonnet? Would that be underneath the bonnet?
I'm not sure what the technical term is, and that is a very technical term. I think that it was just obviously designed. It's been built by the What If team, and they are notoriously not great at search engine optimization or indeed user experience.
You see, I like What If. Am I a strange user in some way? I think What If is quite a good site for me.
We don't need to answer that question, do we? I think it's. I mean, the problem with the way that it's been constructed is that their audience is that even though it's supposed to be the centre of the model, they haven't built a site which is easy to find for an audience. So if you Google philanthropically funded news site, then you'll find the Global Mail. But my feeling is that not many people are Googling that term. And the way that it's optimised, it just doesn't take you directly to the content. It's difficult to navigate. I could go on.
Colin.
Oh, well, Chris, I was just wondering, I want to bring you in on this. What do you think of their funding model, which is just philanthropic? And I mean, one of the points Tim made was that as a startup you've got to be hungry, and you know not only are we hungry as the editorial staff, but sales, you know, as loud as they are normally, you know, they're very hungry. What do you think, by not having a funding model or having a philanthropic model, there's a lack of hunger?
Well, I think you can certainly look at something like Wikipedia and show that as precedent. There's absolutely precedent for people to collaborate in a philanthropic effort to make something happen. I think the challenges that have been talked about, and they are manifold and manifest, but I think that there's a genuine opportunity, if these guys can get it right, to be quite a distinctive and different voice for news and for reporting in this space. I think increasingly we're seeing cynicism with bigger news brands, and if they can get it right, I think they'll have a very successful proposition indeed.
Well, next, the ABC's a bloodbath for Fairfax. This morning saw the release of the ABC's, the Audit Bureau of Circulation, which covers the circulation numbers of newspapers and magazines. So, Tim, you've had a chance to digest this information. As you said, a bloodbath for Fairfax. Can you expand on this?
Yeah, I always love the ABCs because I always leave it to the last minute. We receive them under embargo several days in advance. Usually it's Friday they come out, and usually it's a midnight embargo. And generally at 11 o'clock the night before is when I finally get around to writing it.
And you published it a few minutes past 12, didn't you?
Exactly, yeah. So at least they just went up slightly on timed release, but only an hour or two after written. So a couple of key points. Firstly, on newspapers. That, I guess, was where the biggest headlines were. Now, on the face of it, very bad for Fairfax, particularly the Metro masthead. So the Herald in Sydney down Monday to Friday, Saturday, the Sun Herald on a Sunday, all down more than 10%. Similar story with The Age in Melbourne as well. One thing behind the scenes worth a look is that they're also releasing the first digital data. Now, that actually wasn't too bad. Hard to tell just the value of it, but there's a single place which, to me, pointed out the best set of green shoots, if you want to call it that, which was look at the Sun Herald, so the Sydney Sunday paper, about 47,000 less print copies than a year before, but they put on just over 40,000 digital replica editions. So in other words, the argument being they're almost putting on digital readers as far, digital copies, as we always got to be careful to distinguish between individual copies and individual readers, almost as fast as there is in print copies. One of the issues, of course, is it's probable that each digital reader is worth less than a print subscriber. That's one of the possible issues. Another thing is that about half of those are joint print online subscribers, and also worth mentioning about half of them seem to have come in the usually heavily discounted school sales category or tertiary educational sales category. So a lot of kind of caveats around there.
Yeah, I mean, as a journalist, it seems almost automatic to write the negative stuff about print. Are there any glimmers of hope? You mentioned digital, but any print titles that perhaps could be singled out as doing well or less badly than the others?
Yeah, less badly is how you look at it, really. So overall, most newspapers are some sort of loss. Literally a couple that held firm. Trend generally was News Limited doing better than Fairfax. Now, I say better because, of course, if Fairfax are actually being more rational about the copies they put out there, then they actually might be making more profit as a result, whereas News might have wasteful copies out there, you know, sort of freebies, giveaways, all of those sort of things.
Yeah, I mean, I think this digital migration that all big publishers are facing is a huge challenge, and I'm actually still yet to be convinced that any of these big organisations have really actually got to grips with the extent of the digital transformation that's increasingly going to undermine them. I simply do not see the evidence out there. I see tinkering and I see changes, but I just don't think these organisations have got to grips with what's happening. You don't see innovation. Something like Flipboard should have been invented by these organisations if they were serious about getting digital and engaging audiences and taking advantage of the opportunities that digital presents. They should be seeing and producing those kind of innovations. I just don't think they're taking it seriously enough.
Sorry, Chris, Flipboard, can you just explain briefly what that is?
Yeah, so Flipboard is an app which essentially aggregates content and it puts stuff that you can take various streams, either a Twitter or a Facebook stream. It's a really elegant way of browsing and looking at your Facebook data. But it could have equally been an elegant way to browse news that a news organization could have aggregated across all of the places and spaces in which they're aggregating news. It's like this kind of innovation, this kind of thinking outside the box is what these organizations are going to need to do to get to grips with engaging new audiences in new ways and monetizing that, because the monetization of this isn't going to come from content, which is increasingly commoditized. It's going to come from how you aggregate that content in valuable ways.
So, Chris, which publications would you be advising your clients to buy into, and which ones are you advising them to steer well clear of?
Well, I mean, you'd never really advise them to steer clear. I think what you do is you always approach this from the point of view of saying, what are we looking to achieve? Where are the relevant audiences? Where are the interesting platforms where we can communicate a brand and create a brand connections? As a planner, I'm less interested in the to's and fro's of the actual numbers. They're important from a reporting point of view, of course, but I'm a lot more interested in where those interesting platforms are, where brands can engage and tell compelling stories in relevant ways. And that's what we always look for, and we'll increasingly look across many brands and different platforms for doing that. But we've got to start seeing more and better innovation out of these organizations in order to have those platforms.
Now, Tim, FHM was the big story last year, or not last year, but with the last ABCs. They dropped 48% from the previous and then announced closure. Who's the biggest victim this time around?
Yeah, I think for me it probably looks like Zoo Weekly. So it's worth noting that this time, because we're in the quarterly numbers, only the weekly magazine figures come out, not the monthlies. Zoo Weekly, yeah, are down about 30%, you know, which, I mean, it sounds quite a lot, you know, when you talk about it anyway. But when you think, okay, you know, for every 10 readers who were standing in the corner reading that magazine a year ago, there are now only 7 of them, is a pretty rapid drop. It's accelerated. The last set of numbers we saw, they were down about 25%. Certainly it was the biggest drop within, not only within the weekly magazines generally, but within the ACP stable. We've already seen Matt Stanton, the boss of ACP, flag up that more closures will follow. Does make you wonder, you know, what the future is. Also, they do a couple of soft
core porn titles as well, People and Picture, and that their falls were nearly as dramatic. So it certainly seems to be Men's Lifestyle is the problem.
And how about Maxim? Because that's a new entry to the lads / soft porn, you know.
Yeah, because it wasn't a weekly title, it's a monthly title, so it wasn't in the set of data that came out this week. But the early signs, you know, seem to be relatively good for them in that they've actually got some reasonably good local talent stars on it, seem to be working hard, being hungry, and I suspect a much lower cost base as well, you know. So we probably, you know, we've seen, you know, people who are involved in Ralph, for instance, go there. And actually that's been the other interesting thing is we're almost seeing people who were employed by that sector reinventing the products elsewhere. So, yeah, we've seen Maxim launch. I was at a launch this week for a new magazine for people in the mining industry called Rocks, which chatting to people at the launch, a lot of them are former Ralph staff. No, tell it like Alpha staff, Alpha magazine, which is another one of the men's titles, which has since shut. But, of course, you know, people on, you know, fly in, fly out, you know, are generally young men with a lot of money. So it's a niche that's still worth targeting, but you've just got to find another way of targeting it. Now, just a reminder that if you do want to throw in any questions, then do come in through the platform or via the Twitter hashtag MumbrellaCast. Kathy.
Sorry, this is a seamless experience. Sorry, guys, I'm just trying to find if we've got questions from the audience. I'm not seeing them in the chat box.
Yes, now we'll do feel free to come in on the MumbrellaCast hashtag if you prefer. Chris, which publications would you be advising your clients to buy in, and which ones would you suggest to steer clear of?
Well, I think it's all about finding the right and relevant platforms, I think, and finding compelling ways to engage audiences with brands.
Next, marketing the Avengers. Now, over the past 2 weeks, The Avengers has taken the film world by storm. In the US, it has the largest opening weekend of any film ever. And in Australia, it has the eighth largest opening in history. To date, the film has taken about $33 million in Australia. Now, Chris, just looking at this, I'm assuming as, you know, a cultural native, you will have gone to see this on its opening day. But also as a marketer, what do you think drove the success of the marketing?
Yeah, I might have wandered along to a 3D screening in IMAX on the first day of opening. I may have that may have happened. I think it's a phenomenal success story. I mean, one, it's a brilliant movie. But I think when you look at this movie, you've got to think about it really in the context of the arc and the broader Avengers piece. I mean, in many ways, it is kind of a movie that has been trailed for the last 4 years. There have been like five trailers for this, each of which was between 90 minutes and over 2 hours long. And what they've had is a really successful string of trailers in the shape of Iron Man 1 and 2 and Captain America and Thor and arguably the second Hulk movie, even though Ruffalo took on the role this time around. Amazing, you know, set of trailers. And actually, I sat down with fellow fans Jack, Stu, and Fingers the weekend before it launched.
Hang on, do you want to run through those names again? Fingers?
So Jack, Stuart, and Fingers. Matt, I suppose.
Did his mother give him that name? That doesn't sound like a real one to me.
His mother certainly did not give him that name. I don't think. But we sat down the weekend before Avengers was released, and we watched all the previous movies. We just spent a day watching them all. So we watched Iron Man 1, 2, Captain America, and Thor, and it's amazing the arc, the care and attention which has been built into joining up these movies. I think it's actually quite unprecedented. And then to put this piece in the hands of, you know, a real genius and the master of the ensemble piece in terms of Joss Whedon, you know, he's done Buffy, he's done Firefly, he really gets that ensemble piece better than I think anyone. To put it in his hands was just one of the smartest moves. And I think that as a fan of the comics and as a fan of the characters, it's great. Not just to see it do so well, but to see so many people embrace the franchise and a brilliant marketing exercise, I should say, as well, that the other marketing efforts above and beyond that, in terms of what we've seen from a digital point of view, have been awesome as well.
Yeah, I mean, in the US, the film did more than Thor on its opening weekend. It did more than Thor and Captain America did in their complete cinematic runs. So I think it was $200 million to become the biggest. Wow. Tim, you saw it. What did you think?
Speaking purely as a consumer, thought it was great. It's a popcorn movie and a very good popcorn
roller coaster
movie.
Ride.
Yeah, I'm not going to go for that cliche.
You've just called it a popcorn movie. I mean, why hold back now? I'm just butting in to change the subject slightly. We've got a question from the internet. Is there a reverse correlation between the rise of easy access internet porn and the decline of soft porn men's mags? And we're all looking at Chris.
Absolutely.
Of course there is.
I think you'd probably look at there's a genuine allegory, I think, between the digitization of content, the print organizations face and the challenges, and the same transfer of content from the print medium to the digital age. I think that there's never been a more truer allegory. Not that I would have any personal experience of that at all.
Next, media agency MEC goes real-time.
So this week, media agency MEC announced it was becoming the real-time agency, saying that agencies need to cooperate in consumer time rather than brand time. Chris, what do you think they mean by this, if anything?
Well, I think they certainly mean something. I think what they mean is they're increasingly moving to a model which is all essentially about facilitating real-time marketing. So how do you move away from the idea of the campaign, the idea that we're going to launch on a certain date, we're going to get a fixed amount of ratings, we're going to come off air at a certain time, and in that time we're going to have shifted sentiment or activated something else. And in the context of media, in the context of the world in which we now live, everyone kind of gets that model is increasingly less relevant, and you need to be a lot more reactive. You need to be doing a lot more scenario planning. You need to be putting a lot more reactionary capabilities around campaigns. And also you need to be able to socialize things an awful lot more as well. So I think what they're talking about are the capabilities to do that. So as a proposition, is it timely? Absolutely. Like any proposition, the proof's in the pudding. You know, it's what do they do with it? And like any agency, with any proposition, what do you do with that proposition, and how do you make it live in the real world? Mm.
One concrete thing that the CEO, Peter Vogel, told me, beyond the bluster of the positioning statement, was that he's more likely to hire someone in search than he is in display advertising. I think I know what he means in terms of, you know, keeping in touch with what consumers are doing now. Bearing that in mind, is there anything that from PhD's positioning, which, correct me if I'm wrong, is PR, pioneering, that relates to how you hire people, what sort of people you're looking for? Are you looking for pioneers?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. We look for one thing, and I certainly look for one thing above and beyond anything else, which is just sheer ability to question things and be inquisitive people who will question things and who will ask themselves the simple question, is there a better way to do this? How do I find a better way to do this? Is the philosophy and is what underpins everything we do at PhD. And I think that our tools will evolve, our systems will evolve as the world changes. But I think what remains really relevant and really important to us as the world changes, we remain steadfastly fixed to this idea of smart, interested and interesting people who ask, is there a better way?
Well, let me throw this one also to you, Robin, because you've been writing the Mumbrella Media Agency Guide at the moment, which goes to press very, very shortly. And you get the pleasure of asking what they stand for.
Yeah.
Genuinely a useful positioning or a gimmick in your cynical journalistic view?
Yes, I would say it's a gimmick, but in defence to MEC and in defence to every media agency out there, it's a homogenised market. And it's very difficult for agencies to differentiate themselves. I'll just read out a couple of the positioning statements. Obviously, a few months ago, Zenith Opta Media relaunched as the Open Agency, which was then subsequently criticised for being sort of hopelessly vague. And I read out a few others. CARA, they stand for Redefining Media. Starcom is the Human Experience Agency. Maxis just uses one word, change. Mindshare is original media thinking. Match is makes you feel differently about what media can do. Mitchell's, the only billion-dollar brand in Australia, doesn't even have a line They have nothing, just the name, Mitchells, which actually probably says something as well. In summary, I just think media agencies are so hard to tell apart. But Chris, you're waving your hand frantically.
No, it just occurs to me that the next time we all have a big media party, there should be a fancy dress. It should become dressed as your agency tagline. I think it would be an awesome fancy dress theme for the next big media bash. I'm coming as a change today.
Although I think the scary thing would be what would open wear.
And on that horrific note, listeners, do you have a work mantra? If you do, please message us through the GoToWebinar platform, or even better, tweet it using the Mumbrellacast hashtag.
The real-time agencies won't replace the global slogan, active engagement. Chris, do you have a... does PhD have a mantra?
Yeah, absolutely. At the heart of our organisation is pioneering. What that means is, how do we find a better way? And that's what we ask all of our people every day to think about and consider, how in everything we do and everything we consider, do we challenge ourselves and our partners and our clients to find a better way to do it?
As a cynist, I always sort of feel that this feels a bit Jerry Maguire, sort of, it's not a memo, it's a mission statement. But that's just me.
it's a mission statement to me, Colin.
Next, shipping the POMs home as the government threatens LAFA.
This week, as forecast, the government confirmed in its budget cuts that the living away from home allowance available to many would be closed. It is a confusing situation, though. Now, Cathy, there's been talk of transitional arrangements. There's been talk about the difference between whether you're from overseas or whether you're local. A big issue for agencies because they employ lots of overseas staff, particularly Brits, we might have noticed, might have detected from one or two accents in this conversation. You've been trying more than most of us to untangle it. Where are you at?
Well, I think the Treasury feels that the position is fairly clear, and that they told us all this was happening way back in November, and we've just been choosing to hope that they change their minds, I think. So the deal is that definitively, if you maintain a second home overseas, which is the condition under which people receive LAFA, that benefit will end as of the 1st of July 2012. If you're maintaining a second home in Australia, then you're good for another couple of years. And they're also tightening the sort of regulations around having to prove that you really do have this second home, which I think has been something which many people have criticised, that the whole thing is a bit of a rort for British people to maintain a spare bedroom in their parents' house.
So explain where the confusion crept in this week. It was over the transitionary arrangements.
Well, essentially, they published a second release, which really read very similarly to the November version, saying the changes were being imposed on people who maintain a residence in Australia. They're offering this 2-year transition period to people with their second Australian home. And it did feel like the wording was fairly confusing. The Treasury haven't been very forthcoming in clarifying that. I mean, we've been chasing them for 2 days for an update, and only today they've definitively said that that's the deal.
Yeah, I certainly found it confusing first time round. I had a chat with David Gaines, who's the boss at Maxis, and he told us that unless you're 100% dedicated to your career, and fame and fortune in media land is your end game, then the LAFA changes won't mean much to you. Most people come to Australia for the lifestyle, and you can't put a price on that. So, Chris, LAFA, did the LAFA arrangement sweeten the deal for you to come out here? And will its disappearance stem the flow of foreigners to these shores?
This is even tougher than the porn question. So declaration of interest. I am a recipient of LAFA currently. It didn't, to be honest, influence my decision to come here. I came to Australia because of the opportunity in the role and because I was seeking a genuine change. And I got all those things, and I'm loving my time out here, and I hope it continues for a good time yet. I think our lawyers are certainly advising us that the transitional provisions are unlikely to apply to temporary residents, which includes 457 visa holders. That's the advice from our lawyers. I'm not quite sure I agree with David that most people are here for the lifestyle. I think that there is a genuinely thriving and interesting media industry in Australia. And I think the idea that people are just here for the beaches and the mountains and the bars of the eastern suburbs, or whatever it may be, does it a slight injustice. But I think that we are going to see, I think, some variances, some changes as a result of this. But as long as you get interested and interesting people wanting to work in media, then I'd like to think that those people are here, want to be here, and throw the energy behind our industry.
Well, that is very nearly all we have time for this very first live experimental Mumbrella. Thank you very much for your patience and listening. We really will appreciate your tell us what you think. Tell us what we can improve. Tell us how we can do it differently. We will carry on a few of these experiments. We'll probably try the likes of Google Hangouts at some point. We'll do more with Citrix Online, with their GoToWebinar platform, who are today's sponsor. And basically, we'll just try and learn as we go what kind of entertains you. What makes you want to throw in some questions. But as I say, you know, maybe in the comment box about this story on Mumbrella, throw in your thoughts. Tell us how we did. Thank you very much again to Citrix Online for use of the GoToWebinar platform. Thank you goes also to Christopher Stevenson.
Thank you very much. I won't take it personally that when the porn question came up, four people turned around and looked directly at me. And remember to go to youtube.com/change1thing and tell us which one thing about the media industry you would change. And because it's a special occasion, a very big hello to Jason Isaacs.
And thank you also to Kathy.
Always a pleasure.
And thank you to Colin.
You stole my line, Kathy. Always a pleasure.
Never.
And thank you to Robin.
Cheers, Tim.
The Mumbrella Cast was brought to you from the newsroom of Mumbrella House. See you next week. Toodle pip.